Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassam. It's clear that these days many people are understandably unsettled by the state that our world is in, and asking questions. There's not just one thing, there's many dimensions to the challenges that people face, the environmental challenges, ethical challenges, political challenges. The state of the world, as we see it, as we experience it, is very disrupted on so many levels. It's helpful to reflect on how the Buddha addressed these predicaments. So, for instance, those of you that are familiar with the Dhammapada, the very first verse, verse 1, all states of being are determined by the heart, by consciousness, by awareness. All states of being are determined by the heart. It's the heart that leads the way. As surely as the wheel of the ox cart follows the hoof prints of the animal that draws it, so suffering follows when we speak or act with an impure heart. Now, the image the Buddha is using there is not something that most of us would be familiar with. We don't see ox carts and hoof prints around the place. However, if we stop and think about it, as surely as the wheel of the ox cart follows the hoof print of the animal that draws it, so suffering will follow when we act or speak with an impure heart. And then Dhammapada verse 2. All states of being are determined by the heart. It's the heart that leads the way. As surely as our shadow never leaves us, so well-being follows when we speak or act with a pure heart. So I think that's really important. Some people might say, I read that and that's not particularly deep or profound. Well, it's the Buddha's pointing to the core issues rather than speculating and complaining and criticizing and blaming and operating on the surface level. He's going right down to the core. And clearly it's the case that there's not an excess of well-being around. What is the reason? It's the state of consciousness, the state of awareness, the state of the heart. And this is not something just, again, to think about. It's something to feel about, to question our own hearts. What is it in our hearts? What is it in our being? What is it about us as human beings that means there's not well-being, that means there is so much suffering, individually, collectively, environmentally, ethically? And again, the Buddha explained it very precisely as this, the three poisons, he called them, greed, hatred, and delusion. This is the expressions of the polluted heart, polluted awareness, distorted consciousness. It manifests, when there's unawareness, it manifests in these three ways. Yes, of course, there's a multitude of variations on greed, hatred, and delusion. However, it seems to me really useful to be able to distill it down to say, what are the core issues here? What are we really dealing with? What are we really dealing with here? It's the state of greed, hatred, and delusion. It's these conditions that are causing the struggles and causing the apparent problems and the conflicts that we suffer from. And these three poisons. Some of you at least will be aware of discourse called the Adita Pariyaya Sutta, or the, sometimes known as the Fire Sermon, one of the many great discourses that the Buddha gave, where he talks about this. It was about raga gina, dosa gina, moha gina, burning with greed, burning with hatred, burning with delusion, or the fire of greed, the fire of hatred, the fire of delusion. And instead of talking about the three poisons here, talk about the three fires. And this is not, this is to be understood as not dogma that the Buddha was holding up, this is something you should believe in. Rather, it's pointing in a specific direction, or in particular directions, in the heart direction, looking at the quality of awareness itself. And studying, listening to, pay attention to those beings who have purified their heart, purified their awareness, act out of a pure heart. Look at the consequence of their behavior and see the contrast, and that speaks volumes. And those beings who've done their work and those beings who haven't done their work, and that can inspire us and help us to realize, all right, this work matters. This really learning how to drill down, to discipline our faculties and feel our way into seeing where we do, what we do, that brings about this way of behaving, acting from an impure heart, acting out of greed, acting out of hatred, acting out of delusion. There was an occasion when Ajahn Chah was talking about this, well, probably there were many occasions. One occasion he was talking about how people will come to see him and the suffering, and he said, I tell them to let go, and you know, that clinging is the cause of suffering, that is clinging to things, clinging to experiences, clinging to memories, clinging to perceptions, clinging to feelings. This is the cause of suffering, and you need to let go. And then he said, they just keep telling me, but it's burning, Lumpur, I'm suffering, it's burning, Lumpur. I said, well, let go. And he said, it's like they're holding on to this red hot coal, and I'm telling them to let go, and all they can do is just say, it's burning, Lumpur, it's burning, I'm suffering, and they won't let go. And he was talking about how some people do get the message and let go and realize that it was clinging that was causing the suffering. And others don't let go and die while they're still clinging, still burning. And so why is it that we have heard these teachings and yet still we do the clinging? Why is it that it's so difficult to let go? What can we do about habitually clinging? People are often performing very impressive practices, keeping diligently to the precepts and seriously sitting meditation and seriously studying scriptures, and yet still seriously clinging. Why is that? What's going on that means we stay stuck in this cycle, in this pattern? And even though we have all the good ideas, even though we have the good examples, we still keep clinging. Well, one thing I would suggest that we do and is worth looking at is the misperception. We focus in the wrong place. We focus on the forms of the practice rather than the spirit. We pay too much attention to the forms. The forms can be so impressive. Like, for instance, when you first come across the teachings, the form of the Buddha's teachings, this is amazing. I can still remember my first book when I was about, 19, 20 years old. I came across my first Buddhist book somebody gave me, and this is amazing. And I had these ideas about Buddhism, and that's so impressive. And then my first meditation retreat, being taught how to discipline attention, and sitting meditation and walking meditation and these techniques and these forms, and so grateful for the experience that I had in my first meditation retreat. And after those initial experiences, it's very tempting to hold to the forms and just got to read more books because I had this great experience on reading my first book and got to do more retreats or learn more techniques or get better at the techniques. However, are these forms, are they really the point? I think this is the temptation. When we're stuck in unawareness, our perception falls short. It settles on the outer form. And like when we do the pujas, what's the point of puja? These devotional practices. The Buddha encouraged it. Pujaja pujaniya nang etang mangalamutamang. Honoring that which is worthy of honor. This is the greatest blessing. Performing pujas is worthwhile. It's encouraged. However, when we perform pujas, what are we doing? Like when we bow down, may the Buddha hear my acknowledgement of fault. And when we say that, we bow down. Are we really paying attention to what we're doing? Or just, and then move on, dhamma next. This is what often happens with forms. We become perfunctory in our effort, in our engagement. And so it is with meditation. So get up, sit meditation. So get the right posture, then do the meditation technique. Focusing perhaps too much on the form of the meditation and not remembering that the point of the meditation is what? It's to learn how to read where we're at. That's the point of the meditation. It's to cultivate bhavana, jitta bhavana, to cultivate the heart of awareness, to learn how to read our own condition, to read where we're at. So just sitting in a posture and then performing a particular technique, is that really what we're supposed to be doing with meditation? Might it not be more suitable to stop and just spend a few minutes checking out where we're at, like feeling the whole body, feeling the tone of our mood, where are we at? Are we ready for this? And then consciously engage in disciplining attention or focusing attention, however we use a formal meditation period. Or pujas, likewise, we do them regularly. And do we do them in a perfunctory way, or do we really appreciate that the point of the pujas is to bring all aspects of our being, our body, our speech, and our mind in harmonious alignment with true principles, with Dhamma? There was an interesting example a few days ago when we were sitting here in the Dhamma Hall, our evening meditation session before the chanting, and we were all sitting facing the shrine, and there was this noise behind us, and something was going on. Obviously, somebody had come into the Dhamma Hall here while we were meditating, and I let it go on for a while. There's quite a lot of noise, somebody shuffling around, and I turned around, there was a family in the middle of the Dhamma Hall here had come to do their puja. And they had all this cellophane wrapped around the flowers, and then undoing the cellophane was making an incredible amount of noise. And the people were just sitting here in silence meditating, and these three people were standing there making all this noise, and I thought, So I made a gesture to them, which I thought meant, well, just, you know, sit down and be quiet. And then turned around and continued. I don't know what they thought the gesture meant. Anyway, they came right up here to the shrine, continued making noise, sticking flowers in the vases and lighting a candle just a few inches away from my face. And I think one of them was about to light a wadge of incense and stick it in front of my nose just before one of the monks got up and pointed out that there's actually a shrine outside as well, and they could do their puja out there if they wanted to. So, yes, the saddha, the faith, was rather beautiful. I thought the whole thing was interesting to observe. However, there wasn't a lot of sati. There was a lot of saddha, not a lot of sati then. They had the faith, which is great, and want to do their puja, which is great. However, the lack of sati and sampajanya means that the embodied mindfulness and clear comprehension meant that the way they were going about their puja was not congruent with what was going on around them. And so, So this is what happens when we pay too much attention to the forms, including the forms of spiritual practice. And that discourse that I mentioned a minute ago, where the Buddha was giving what we call the Adita Pariyaya Sutta, the fire sermon. It's the context of it was where the Buddha had met these brothers, the Kasapa brothers, who were all fire worshippers, and presumably he saw that they had potential for upgrading their spiritual efforts and put a lot of energy into pointing out the error of their ways. And they were very famous teachers and many, many followers and very adept in their particular form of spiritual worship. However, what the Buddha pointed out was they were paying attention to the wrong direction. The fires that they were worshipping wasn't really going to free them from the suffering. The fires they needed to be looking into was the internal fires, raga gina, dosa gina, moha gina, the inner fires of greed, hatred and delusion. And eventually the Buddha was successful in turning these fellows around, and they threw their fire-worshipping paraphernalia into the river and became bhikkhus. And getting the point means that we need to let go of some of our old ways, even some of the ways that we have found reassuring, like the first Dhamma book that we read or the first meditation technique we picked up. These forms served a certain purpose at a stage of practice. Well, the first teacher we lived with, and my first teacher, I'm enormously grateful to him. However, when it came myself to going to Thailand and being a bhikkhu, I didn't find him particularly inspiring. And that doesn't mean to say I don't respect him or I'm not grateful to him. It's just that I found another teacher. And so it is with our approach to the spiritual exercises, that just because something works at a certain stage of practice doesn't mean to say it's going to continue to work. And if we feel limited, if we feel like we're not able to let go, if we're holding on to something and we're burning and we feel frustrated, and I can't let go, Lumpur, I can't let go, and Lumpur's telling us to let go, you know, what is it? Well, we need to remember that the forms are there to serve the spirit. As my good friend, the late Barney Shorter pointed out, that in religious practices where the spirit serves the form, well, then religion has failed. The forms are there to serve the spirit. And that's not just rituals and symbols, it's also the relationship we have to concepts, and concepts of forms, mental formations. And the addiction we have to mental certainty, mental clarity, can feel very justified. Like the pursuit of tranquility using a particular meditation technique. If we went on a retreat and got a little peaceful, maybe got very peaceful on our first meditation retreat, and so we keep using the same meditation technique, maybe for years, then maybe if it's not working, we need to exercise the agility to consider, well, maybe there's another approach. Doesn't mean to say we started off wrong, it just means that was initial. And likewise, our fondness for concepts about practice. The point of the Buddha's teachings is to help us discover something new, something really new, something really new, something we don't know. If we knew unshakable freedom, then we wouldn't be suffering. We don't know unshakable freedom. What we know is that we have faith that freedom is possible. And so we engage in these spiritual practices. To really progress, we need to be daring enough to question our initial efforts. These fires, the fires of greed, hatred and delusion, this conflagration that we experience inwardly, and the outer conflagration of the world, the Buddha said is not It's not unavoidable, it's avoidable conflagration. These fires, and we don't have to suffer because of them. And so having faith, yes, trusting that the Buddha knew what he was talking about, and then being daring in a skillful way, modest way, being daring to let go of some of the old ways of practice and go into what looks like the unknown. If we want to discover something new, really new, and that's what's called for on all levels, and like the world situation we're in now, we need new ways of cooperating, we need new ways of living politically, environmentally, economically, on all sorts of levels. The way we've evolved is not working very well, and inwardly in our own personal life. Unless we've finished our work, then there's something new to be discovered, and that means we're going to have to face the unknown, and that takes daring. Thank you very much for your attention.